This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, we'll get to Mike here quick. Dan, who do we have with this bizarre song?
This would be Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer.
We played Jim Morrison Once Upon a Time, but...
Yeah, he did. He did. There's a difference.
Yeah, there is.
So we're playing actors, actresses who are trying to sing, and most of the time it did not work out well at all. Dr. Michael Osterholm is kind enough, as always, to join us. He joins us weekly. Mike, it is always a pleasure. Let's start with the vaccines. It's a daunting challenge. We know that we're facing this horrific pandemic, which in ways is getting worse. When you look at this and when you look at what has taken place so far, and where we are at with the vaccine rollout, do you believe we should, as a country, be optimistic about what has taken place so far or disappointed about what has taken place so far?
Well, I think it's somewhere in between. And let me say that there are very bright sides and there are some darker sides. The bright sides is that, in fact, what has happened in the last 10 months to get us these new vaccines is simply remarkable. It is a Manhattan Project-like effort. No one would have thought that in March you could actually truly bring forward two vaccines with 90-95% protection, that you would be vaccinating millions of people. That is the great news. The challenge was is that Operation Warp Speed really focused on the initial research and development, the approval process, the studies to show safety and how well they worked, the manufacturing. And then when it came to that last mile and that last inch, there was no attention paid to that. There was no investment in that. And it's like building the bridge, as I've shared with you before, that, you know, the 1,400-foot bridge, you only had money for 1,350 feet. You know, it's kind of a complicated bridge situation. And so what's happened is we've really had to literally by the seat of our pants at state and local levels, try to figure out how to get these complicated vaccines out. Remember, the temperature requirements in some of these vaccines are unlike anything we've had before. The Pfizer vaccine, once you reconstitute that, you have 6 hours to use them. And if you don't use the doses during that time, you have to throw them away. So it makes it complicated. Then on top of that, we did a really, really poor job as a public health community, as federal government, medical community, et cetera, to explain to people what these vaccines are. I mean, you and I have talked about this in the sense of Operation Warp Speed. What a name. And then you put military behind it, the potential that somehow a political thumb was on the scale of approval. All those things make people very concerned. You know, maybe I'll wait. But then in addition, we added in to that whole process the idea that they're made with what we call messenger RNA platforms. In other words, the way we deliver these are brand new vaccines. People hear genetic material. Haha, what's it going to do to me? We've never educated the public or, for that matter, our own medical colleagues what these vaccines are, what they're not, why they are as safe as they are, et cetera. And so I think that from that last point, that's why we have run into some of the challenges we have. And we've got to do a much better job there, and I think we are. I think people are finally starting to get together. If you're one of those people who spent the last 2 weeks as somebody in a risk group that has, that has been recommended to get vaccine and you still can't get in, this is so frustrating. Oh, my, is this frustrating, and it should be. But all I can say is just have some patience. It's coming. The real challenge now is not about people messing up out in the states or local areas. It's the amount of vaccine. You can't plan big clinics and tell you, no, are you going to have enough doses to do that? and to go about registering everyone to come to that clinic. The Biden administration just 2 days ago assured the governors that within this week, they will now start to be able to provide a three-week roadmap of how much vaccine is coming into any one given state. So now we can make the decisions. So whether they're health plans, whether they're community clinics, whether they're state-based clinics, whatever, now we know how much vaccine we have. And that still isn't going to be satisfactory because we're not going to be able to vaccinate a lot of the people in this country till well into the summer. And we have to help prepare them right now for that. But the vaccine is moving as quickly as it can, and I'm confident at this point that it will save millions of lives.
Let's talk about Minnesota. When the plan first was unveiled last week, the computer went down, and that, to me, is more than just disheartening. And I get it that a lot of people were prepared, but to me, some blame has to be fixed there. Then the decision was made on a lottery. I just philosophically have a tough time with the lottery as opposed to, and it's a challenge, but we've now said, smart people like yourself have said, it should be 65 and older. Well, within that group, Mike, as you know better than me, you have some 67-year-olds, 68-year-olds who are as healthy as 25-year-olds. And you have some others who might be that same age or might be 15 years older, and they're facing very difficult health challenges. Do you think it should be this lottery versus within that group? We are trying to get to the most urgent individuals as promptly as we can.
You know, you are right on the mark. You're absolutely on the mark, Chad. The problem with that is, in many cases, the challenge becomes, well, who gets to decide who is more severe than someone else? And what happens, you end up spending so much time trying to figure that out, you're missing time vaccinating people. And actually, believe it or not, if you just cover an age and try to get them as fast as you can, you actually move the vaccine faster into that population than if you tried to handpick these people here at the highest risk, these people are at the next highest risk. And so intuitively, what you said makes perfect sense. But trying to get the most number of people vaccinated as effectively as you can, it is just go with an age group and get it done. And that's what we have to do with speed right now. I mean, that's really important. And so we do want to cover, you know, everyone. I want to cover the people who are less than 65, who have medical conditions that put them at higher risk for severe disease. As you know, we talked last time, if you look at those 21 to 65 in the United States right now, there are 81 million people who would be at considered higher risk for having a very serious illness or even death with this virus. So, you know, we just have to keep going as fast as we can, moving as fast as we can. And, you know, I am very, very concerned. And then we have to, again, I think, honestly communicate this to the public. I keep hearing people saying, and, you know, my business, well, we're in a race with the vaccine. No, we're not. We're not. The virus is not in a race with the vaccine right now. These variants, these new strains of virus are going to do what they're going to do likely in the next 6 to 14 weeks. If you look at the president's most optimistic view initially was 100 million doses in 100 days following the inauguration. He's delivering more on that. He's actually going over that number, and I think it's likely we'll have 100 million doses in 65 or 70 days. But if you look at that number and do the math, it takes two doses for every person. It takes one dose and gets some good protection yet. That's only 12% of the U.S. population will be vaccinated by early April. So the variants are going to do what they're going to do between now and April. So we have to understand vaccine is the long-term key to the kingdom. It is truly the important long-term thing we need, but it's not going to be the thing that is going to, you know, basically cover a large part of our population between now and March.
Critics said when the president first unveiled that he was setting the bar too low in an attempt to look better than the Trump administration. They now have pushed it higher, right? They're talking about, as you said, 1.5 million vaccines a day. Did those critics have a point?
No. And I'll tell you why, is because at the time, no one really knew what the capacity was going to be. And based on what information we did have, and I was part of that in that group, was that that by itself would be a big stretch. It was only when the Biden-Harris team were able to really work closely with the manufacturers did it become clear that there could be more. So we weren't just planting 100 acres of vaccine to we planted 200 acres, and that was what is going to now be what we're going to get. So I think what they did is just tried to be honest and realistic about what they thought they could deliver. Many people criticized them for saying that much. Now we have a much better handle as a country about what the delivery can be. We're anticipating the potential for a third vaccine to be approved shortly. So I think that's what this is just reflecting, you know, not any games with the numbers, just transparency. This is what we got. This is it.
So let's talk the variants, and you've alluded to them multiple times during this conversation. We talked about it last week, and it seems like every time I hear from a different individual, I get a slightly different opinion. Dr. Fauci's talked about that. Maybe there can be some modifications. I saw Dr. Paul Offit, who we've had on the show many times, who I know you know well, said today he thinks that the vaccines we have and the Johnson & Johnson will be fine. For the folks who have been vaccinated now, Mike, mm-hmm. and now that we have this Brazilian variant in our state, we now have the South African one that is in South Carolina, should they feel like they're okay and they won't need any adjustment, they won't need any booster shots, so to speak?
Yeah, first of all, let's just back up. Remember, for everyone who's listening, because people do get confused, a variant is basically one of the SARS-CoV-2 viruses, the virus that causes COVID-19, that has gone through a whole series of mutations or changes in its genetics. And it is capable of transmitted in people, and some of those changes have made it capable of doing certain things. Number one, the first thing we worry about with a variant is it more highly transmissible, meaning is it just more infectious? Number two, does it cause more severe illness? And number three, does it in fact escape our immune protection that comes from vaccine or from natural infection? And these variants have a variety of combinations of one, two, or three, and some of them have multiple ones, some only have one. The variant that I am most concerned about right now, front and center, is what we call B117, or the UK variant. That is the one that is now spreading widely in Europe. It is causing tremendous challenges there. Countries in what they define as total lockdowns are still having a hard time controlling it. This thing may be anywhere from 20-30 to as high as 70% more infectious. That is here. That is widespread through the United States. And if we follow the same path that the other countries have that have had this virus introduced into that country, we typically see a few weeks to 6 or 7 weeks where the virus just quietly makes its way through the countryside, and then you see this huge spike in cases, major spike in cases, higher than anything we've seen to date. That's the one that right now really concerns me. Also, we have data now in the last several days showing that it probably does cause a 40 to 50% increase in severe illness. But it has no evidence at this point of having the mutation that would impact on the vaccine. So that's the one we need to keep our eye on. The okay. one from Brazil, the P1, the one that you just mentioned, we've talked about here in Minnesota, plus the African one, those are the two that also can cause more illness, but in addition have the ability to avoid some of the protection from the vaccine. With Paul and Tony, everything we've seen so far says it likely is a very limited impact, meaning it might reduce it somewhat, but we have no evidence it would have a major impact. So I still worry about those from causing more disease, causing more severe disease. But at this point, while we're following it very closely in terms of the impact of the vaccine, I think the good news is that your vaccines you have now are still going to protect you.
Last thing. This is out in New York. I don't want to get into the politics as much, but I'll just lay it out and then pose the question. You now have the New York State Attorney General accusing Governor Cuomo and the administration of undercounting the COVID-related deaths at nursing homes by as much as 50%. Okay, and that politically will hurt Andrew Cuomo a lot because he put a book out in this. Nursing homes have been a major problem across the country, including in our state. Yep. If we could go back again and go to the start with the knowledge we have now, what could we have done better with the folks in assisted living and nursing homes? Because these stories are just tragic, doesn't begin to touch it.
Yeah. You know, let me just take a step back and say the challenge with long-term care started a long time before COVID did. we have so underfunded and supported long-term care. If you look today at the employees who are in long-term care, many of them are paid minimum wage, have little training. We pay very little to really cover long-term care in the way that we would think of acute care, for example, in the hospital. Most long-term care facilities had no training in infection control, how to stop these transmissions. They had none of the protective equipment. They didn't have any of the things that we would want and need in terms of trying to stop this. So, you know, shame on us as a society. And, you know, and I have to tell you, you know, and I obviously get my share of very angry emails after I'm on here thinking I'm partisan or whatever, you know, so right. be it. Yep. But I'm going to say right now that if nothing else, our social conscience has to have a relook at how do we treat those who are in the elder years of their life. I have heard from so many people that it really almost makes me physically ill when they say to me, well, they're just old people. Let them die. I mean, what's the big deal here? It's old people. They all die. Well, this is true. We all are going to get, none of us are getting out of this world alive. But how we treat those of our loved ones, our family, friends, whatever, in the end of life time period, I think defines who we are as a population. So we need to really go back and look at reimbursement. We need to go back and look at training. How do we cover for the people who work there? What kinds of support do we provide to them? So it's much bigger than just what happened with COVID. COVID was merely what opened and pricked the boil. But the boil is still there, and we have got to deal with that issue as a quality of life for who we are as a civilization. I believe that so strongly.
Yep. Very, very well stated. Great information as always, sir. Stay healthy, and I'll look forward
to
our conversation
next
week.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you later.
Mike.
Bye.
Absolutely. Mike Ostrom, we are very fortunate to have him on.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records. This is a national contest.